Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just gone 5:05. You're now listening to Men Talk with me in the studio today, Luke Watkins, David O'Reilly and Ray Sweeney. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, Hannah.
Thank you all for coming in. If you're listening at home and you'd like to get involved, you absolutely can. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
So the first article is about food, which we like. It says Italians are notoriously tetchy when it comes to Britons messing with their classic dishes, and smothering your pasta in ketchup tops the list of no-nos. A whopping 78% of Italians labelled it the worst culinary horror. I'm not sure I've ever done that. Have you? Be honest.
Yes.
Yes, there's lots of yeses. Go on, David.
It's when the spaghetti bolognese in my case, yeah. When it's maybe the second or third day and it needs a little bit something.
Yes, yeah, so you add it as opposed to just have it.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's a little add.
Yeah, add on.
Yeah.
I agree with the Italians. It's an awful thing to do. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry to say that. One of my daughter's friends comes round and she asks for ketchup and pasta. And I just refuse to give it to her.
So you say no not. To a little girl.
You will have something better than that. Even if it's just a passata or something.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But no to ketchup and pasta.
My husband when we first got together, he kind of warned me that he had ketchup with a lot of things. And he's a good cook and he, you know, likes nice food and everything. And I kind of weaned him off the ketchup because he used to have it with things like lasagna and kind of things that already has a tomato sauce in it, which I felt was really odd.
I think ketchup and scrambled egg is
oh, the, lovely.
Are you're a fan of that?
Sorry, no, I was going to say that's awful. No.
Yeah, that's
awful. That's one of the few things. That's one of the things
brown
I will
sauce
have.
Sauce on scrambled
are you
egg?
Brown,
oh, yeah,
sauce?
Brown sauce.
Brown sauce. No. No, are you ketchup or brown sauce?
Brown sauce.
Oh, you're all brown sauce. Yeah. This happened 2 weeks ago on Men Talk. All the men like brown sauce instead of, wow, it must be a man thing.
It must be a gender thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it an English versus American thing, though?
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm Irish.
Yeah. Who's American here?
No, but I think the ketchup is American, surely. And brown sauce is traditionally English.
Yeah, I've just never liked the taste. Mind you, I probably haven't had it for years and years and years. I've only kind of tried it a few times in my life, brown sauce, and just kind of gone, no. Oh,
sausage and brown sauce.
Yeah, bacon
taste,
sandwich.
Yeah. Definitely. I think the Italians have got it right.
Yeah,
it's
they
so
know their stuff, don't they?
And ketchup as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
they?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, the hidden sugars. Ketchup's one of them, definitely. The other thing that they don't like is pineapple on pizza.
Yes.
You do like it, or you don't? You
hate
agree?
Hate it. Okay. Completely agree.
I used to love it years ago, and I'm talking years ago, probably 20 odd years ago, maybe. It used to be my favourite pizza, Hawaiian ham and pineapple. So I'm not opposed to it, but I haven't had it for years now.
I had one a couple of weeks ago.
Did you really?
For the first time in many, many years.
Okay.
And it was good. It was kind of like, it was nostalgic.
I'd be the same. So, yeah. And what made you have it? How come you had it for the first time in a long time?
I was trying to get, you know, the little one to experiment with more food, and I thought, sweet pizza might work.
Yeah,
it was more for her, but, I think I ate more of it than she did.
Did she enjoy it?
So I think so.
Yeah, I lied. I might try it again. That'd be quite fun. I don't know of anyone that's ever done this. I thought this was a myth, but they say throwing pasta at the wall to see if it sticks and is cooked is also a bit of a faux pas. Has anyone ever done that?
No.
I've got a neighbour who does that.
Really? Yeah.
Really?
And he's Italian.
No.
He would throw the pasta at the ceiling to see if it falls down. If it falls down, it's ready.
How do you get it off the ceiling? Has he got like a step ladder there just in case?
I don't know. If it sticks to the ceiling, it's not ready.
How funny.
Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting one. Putting cream in carbonara.
No,
if you grow up not in Italy, that's like the standard thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Italians don't. But
no,
we would.
You shouldn't.
No.
You're quite right.
Okay.
It was a revelation when I found out that it didn't have cream in it.
Yeah, exactly, because you're used to having it in restaurants, not Italian restaurants, obviously.
No,
but
yeah, but it was to find out how to actually make a carbonara was like mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's egg?
Yeah, there's so much egg in it.
I mean, it's egg and bacon pasta, right? What we should do is get some brown sauce. On the carbonara.
That's not mentioned in the phone call, so go for it. And what's the other one? Oh, yeah, serving garlic bread with pizza offended the least, but still annoyed some Italians.
Garlic bread,
yeah, that was funny. I don't know. Again, that feels like something that you get in a... What's it, like a Pizza Express?
They do
the garlic dough balls. Yeah.
They're good.
Where does that come from? The garlic bread. It's not from Italy, is it?
I don't think. No, because there you'd have like a bruschetta or something. You might have like the bread with the tomato and maybe but not garlic. That must be probably an American thing. But I wouldn't know if I was having pizza. In fairness, I mean, again, years ago, maybe, but. If I was going out for pizza now, there's absolutely no way that I would have more bread as a starter before. I wouldn't, and I, again, can't remember the last time. I would never have garlic bread and then pizza because I'm already thinking, having, lots of bread.
Double carbs.
There's just no need.
Just about to say that. So many restaurants now, that they're encouraging the carb after carb after carb.
Oh.
Like when my sister comes to visit here, we go to a Chinese restaurant up in Duquesa. And I know it's not Italian, but chips and rice.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
I don't get it. But
no.
Yeah. That's quite an English thing as well, doesn't it? Chips and Chinese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it seems to be a bit wrong. And then you pour curry sauce on it.
Chips and curry sauce, great, but not rice as well.
Yeah.
Too much.
There's an article about Glastonbury Festival. Did you watch any of Glastonbury this year?
Heard a bit on the radio, didn't watch.
Yeah? You watch any now?
I just listened to the Coldplay live on the radio, so I'm not sure if it was live.
I saw Dua Lipa. I'm a fan of Dua Lipa, to be fair, and she was amazing. But there was an article saying that it kind of RIP rock and roll, gone are the days of all the great rock and roll bands at Glastonbury. It was a bit more kind of poppy this year. And I just kind of thought, I don't really see why that's a complaint. They're just kind of going with the most popular acts that are out there, I guess. And I don't know, it doesn't bother me. I like rock music, but I also like pop, so...
Mm. They do it every year, don't they? When Jay-Z headlined a few years ago, they said that, hip-hop's taken over and Glastonbury's never going to be the same again. And then Stormzy did. And then, so it's always, it's British
just,
press.
It is what it is, isn't it? Yeah. Do you like Dua Lipa? Is that like, do men like Dua Lipa?
I actually saw something, I think it was on Instagram the day before yesterday, and somebody's cut and compared a 1920s song to Dua Lipa's current single, put them side by side, and showed the comparison of the exact same words.
Really?
Yeah, and it was really interesting. This was like a 1920s song.
Oh, interesting.
And it's one of her current hits.
Yeah.
And the lady in the 1920s, to be fair, she sung it just as well. So There's a bit of copycatting, I think, yeah, going on. But it's a great sound. I like her voice.
She's amazing. She with the dancing she was doing, and a few people said, "Oh, there's no way she was singing live." And she was like, "Absolutely, I was singing live." And she's jumping around, dancing, going upside down, doing all kinds of things, and doing that while singing is really, really skillful. Yeah. I think she's great.
If you see Pink, what Pink does in live.
Yeah.
Doing somersaults up in the air and still singing.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Have to be so fit to do that. Not just the acrobatics, but I mean, to have the right breathing able to sing whilst doing that. Incredible. Yeah.
But I think a lot of the sort of live music these days has become more about the performance, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Which does move away from the rock band idea.
That's true, actually, four guys
with an instrument kind of really jamming. And the whole thing is a bit more circusified almost.
Yeah.
Which is good.
I like that. Yeah. And I guess that's harder to do with a band. I think Coldplay are one of those bands that do that really well. They do manage to make it an incredible performance. They're not just standing there playing their instruments.
Yeah, you're right. It's like a throwback to like they just rock up and just take over on stage, rock up, as opposed to it being stage managed now.
Yeah, exactly. Like
but they were often really drunk and high then, so it's probably hard to do that.
Are we thinking about Glastonbury as a whole or just the Pyramid stage? Because there are other stages that are championing other types of music.
Definitely.
So,
yeah, I think the Pyramid stage they're talking about.
That's definitely more pop. But, of course, that's going to be the most popular people. So
exactly.
Pop music.
Pop, that's where it comes from. Exactly. Right, we better take a break.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio this week is Luke Watkins, David O'Reilly and Ray Sweeney. So, girls have become full members of the St. Paul's Cathedral Choir for the first time. There is an 11-year-old called Leela and Lois, who is 10, and it will be the first time in its 900-year history that girls will officially be a full part of the London Cathedral's choir. Do we think good, it's about time, or do we think why mess with history and tradition? David, you were saying that you were in
From the age of 6 I sang in the Cathedral Choir in Dublin.
Lovely.
And it was an all-boy choir then.
Yeah.
But even by the time I was leaving when I was 18, girls were coming in. Not as full members, but they were being sort of trialed.
Yeah.
But I could never understand why they weren't full members.
Yeah.
Like, especially as young boys, young girls, we had the same voices. Like, our voices hadn't broke, so that's the only reason that boy choristers finish.
Yeah.
Is because their voices break. But why not? I used to sing then. I was a professional singer for a while, and I used to sing with choirs here in the UK.
Back
speaking
in the
English
UK.
In Spain. I'm here in the UK now. But when I sang at the Protestant cathedrals and the Protestant churches, there were always girls singing in the choirs there. So St. Paul's is maybe a little bit behind the time, but they're catching up. And I think it's about time. About time.
I'm sort of conflicted on this. I'm not sure because I'm part of a choir or a singing group and have been for a long time. And it's, you know, anybody's welcome, obviously. It's not a traditional choir in the chorister sense at all. And I did singing at school, and, you know, I've always loved singing and sung in groups. But I kind of think, I don't know. I sort of think that there's nothing wrong with having boys' choirs and girls' choirs and mixed choirs. I sort of, part of me thinks, well, why does everybody need to be included if it's just a boys' choir? But then there's another part of me that thinks, well, yeah, why should there be a boys' choir? You know, yeah. I don't know.
Do they have a girls' choir as well, though?
I don't think so. That's a good... Or do they?
They
sorry.
Did, but they didn't sing at the big services or at the king's coronation, that sort of stuff.
Oh, I think it's about time. I do. I think it's definitely about time.
Why not?
Why not?
Exactly.
Voice of an angel, you know, allow it.
Yeah. It can be a female angel or a male angel.
Exactly.
But, like, I trained my voice. I'm a trained countertenor, which is very high for a male, for an adult. But it's the voice that allowed me to continue singing the songs that I sung when I was a chorister.
Wow.
And that's the reason I trained to be a countertenor, so that I could continue to sing the likes of Pilot Angelicus at weddings and stuff like that.
Oh,
because
lovely.
I miss that. I really did miss it.
Yeah.
When my voice started to break and it was going down, I'm now a sort of a... I can still sing countertenor, but I haven't sung professionally for quite a few years. But I sing in a choir as well.
Yeah.
And I'm more sort of baritone tenor now. Mm. But I do miss getting up there.
Yeah.
But why should it just be the boys that get to sing at the big services in
exactly
St. Paul's?
Especially if when we're talking about boys at a young age, when the voices are so similar with mm-hmm. girls. You know, I get it when you have the Welsh choirs.
Absolutely.
the male Welsh, you know, that's such a beautiful sound, and I think to start adding women to that is silly because it's a different sound. And that's the beauty of the Welsh male choir.
So choir.
There's no need to, you know, include everybody in everything all the time, I kind of think. But
well, it's like the gay men's chorus. You can't have a gay men's and lesbians chorus.
Yes, exactly.
But you can just have a gay choir.
Yes,
so
true.
Let's have a St. Paul's choir rather than a St. Paul's men's choir or male choir.
Yeah. Yes. There we go. I think we've come to a conclusion on that one. This is a subject which has come up a lot, but every time it does, it makes me want to talk about it. The producers of a controversial play have been accused of infantilizing audience members by giving advice on how to breathe. Theatregoers attending Slave Play in London's West End are being offered self-care tips to help them cope with the production's plot and sexually explicit themes. The play is about three interracial couples who undergo relationship counselling, which includes role play on a fictitious slave plantation. The tips can be accessed via the website for the production. The guidance says breathing is a great way to induce a feeling of calm. Try breathing in for 4 to 6 seconds. Hold your breath for 4 to 6 seconds. Exhale for 4 to 6 seconds. The website also offers grounding exercises, which includes doing a body scan to notice how parts of your body feel and wiggling your fingers.
Thank you.
Would you not have known how to do that if I hadn't have said?
For me, are they trying to manipulate the experience we're going to be having at these events?
Exactly. Like,
well, you wonder as well, how horrific is it?
Probably not at all, but it's all this...
hype.
What's the word I talked about with Richard earlier? Trigger warnings, isn't it? Yeah, everything needs a trigger warning. Trigger warning, they're even doing it in the theatre, trigger warning, there's going to be smoking. You know, I kind of get it, you know, when it's, you know, violence or scenes of a sexual nature, whatever. So you're understanding in terms of children, whether it's appropriate for children and that kind of thing. But if it's an adult play featuring adult themes, how specific do the trigger warnings need to be? I don't know.
I think they need to bring in the Hoff. That's Wim Hof. Not David Hasselhoff.
Yes, I was thinking that, David Hasselhoff. Okay.
I mean, he's made a career out of it, hasn't he, Wim Hof? The new breathing method and the techniques.
Yeah.
A lot of people are talking about it and using it, so...
Maybe they should all do that before they go to the theatre.
Exactly.
Or in the theatre.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place for everything, and perhaps the trigger warning notices, in my opinion, should be enough.
Like, I think so. Yeah, just say it on the program and, on
and
the website.
And this is how you should sit. And don't open your eyes too wide. Come
it
on.
Is ridiculous, yeah. Isn't it?
Come on.
Treating people like they're stupid.
Well, my sister went to a premiere in Dublin last week of the new Emma Stone movie. Don't know anything about it.
Richard was just reviewing it.
And
it
she said it was the most gratuitously violent film she has ever seen.
Wow.
And walked, her and the people she went with, just walked out with mouths agog, going, what have we just seen? There were no trigger warnings there. They didn't teach you how to breathe at that one.
Interesting.
Maybe that was the problem.
Yeah.
She might have enjoyed it more.
She'd only known how to breathe.
Exactly. She would have been all right. No, apparently Richard said there were scenes of self-harm.
Yeah.
That's what he said, where he had to kind of look away at parts that were really kind of really shocking.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm. It's just unnecessary, isn't it? I feel like they're doing it to shock, but maybe to get people to walk out the cinema is maybe not what they were going for. But
also, as you said, well, you didn't say it, but it was going around in my head, maybe they're putting this out into the press just to create something so people will go to this
theater. Probably. Well, we're talking about
How
it,
bad
so
is
that's
it?
A step
exactly.
in the... Yeah. Okay, this is a fascinating one, talking about the royal family. Last week, a casually dressed Prince William took his older son George and daughter Charlotte to the sold-out Taylor Swift concert in London. Afterwards, they posed with the superstar and her boyfriend Travis for selfies, which were sent round the world. Travis later revealed on his podcast that William's aides briefed the singer and her beau that there was no need to bow to our future king. Hallelujah, I thought. This is the journalist who's written this. I'm an ardent monarchist, but would humbly suggest this should become the rule in future, and not just for stars, but for every commoner who meets a member of the royal family. I thought this was so fascinating because the amount of stick that Meghan Markle got when the documentary came out with Harry and Meghan, and she was saying that she kind of felt a bit embarrassed and confused about the protocol and the curtsying and everything. She was absolutely slated in the press, with the press saying, this is what you must do with the Queen and all this kind of stuff. And now people are going, is it really necessary? Thoughts?
It's unreal that you could be of such peak celebrity that you wouldn't have to do it. The first thing is, I find that ridiculous.
Yeah.
I've said to the two of them,
people have to do it, but Taylor Swift doesn't need to.
So that I object to fundamentally. Mm. And I also think that, you know, given that the monarchy exists and they're supposed to be kind of closer to gods than normal people are and everything else,
do you think they are?
No, I don't. My opinion of the monarchy is different to what I'm about to say.
But okay,
given that we do, the question in hand is, we have them. Yes, we should curtsy for them and
really
bow and do everything else. I think so. They're not. Okay. They're not normal people. They are anointed by whatever spirit from above. Whether I think they should exist is a different question altogether. But I think, given they do, let's bow.
Before we go to the Irishman, I'm going to ask Ray.
Irish as well.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, okay, there we go.
Born in Ireland, grew up in London. But no, I think stick with tradition, stick with that theme, and it should be kept. It should be kept for all.
Do you think?
Well, yeah. Keep with tradition. Yeah, don't break from that. I think it works well. And I don't think there should be any exceptions for your stardom.
No.
No, it doesn't matter who you are.
Okay. Well, before David says,
he's going to rip that apart.
No.
I actually, as a non-Irish person, as an English person, I agree with this journalist, and I think, well, if Taylor Swift doesn't need to do it, then nobody should need to do it. I'm going with that side of things. If it's either something that everybody has to do or nobody has to do. And if certain people, if they're okay and don't want certain people to do it, then I don't think anybody should do it. And I think that tradition isn't an excuse or a reason for things to continue forever. And I think things change, we learn, we adapt, we kind of go, okay, maybe that behaviour's a bit outdated, a bit old-fashioned, a bit whatever. I know it's extremely controversial, but I think, yeah, if they decided that Taylor Swift didn't need to, I'm more of the opinion, well, then nobody needs to.
Yeah. Well, speaking as another Irishman, no, I lived in the UK for 35 years.
Oh, wow.
London was my home.
Yeah.
The royal family, I adore. Mm-hmm. Absolutely adore. The way I read that article was, this was a private event that the future king, our Prince of Wales, attended with his children, not as an official royal.
No, okay, fair
enough.
So
he didn't expect to be treated like a royal.
Right.
And I agree with you. I think if it has to be done, everyone has to do it. No one gets away with it.
Mm.
However, we are changing.
Yeah.
William is bringing the royal family into the 21st century.
Yes.
Dragging it, I would say. But it is changing. It has realised, I believe, that it has to. It has to adapt to how the public want it to be.
Mm.
They are a public figure. I know they are apparently anointed. Don't agree with that, but there you go. But it is changing. Mm. It is going to evolve into what it needs to be. Because if it doesn't, it'll die.
Yeah.
The whole monarchy will die. And personally, even though I am Irish, I do not want that to happen. It is such a fundamental part of the being English, being British,
yeah,
is having a royal family. That's controversial, but I'm sticking with it because that's what I believe.
And, fair enough.
And I'm delighted to see that. And I think it would have been William who said they don't need to do it.
Yeah.
But I think it was because it was a private visit, not an official royal visit.
Yeah.
And when it is an official visit, when you saw the Emperor and Empress of Japan attend, they were treated with the same respect as our royal family were treated. And I think that is what is due to the royal family. They are due that respect because of what they are, who they are. I adored the Queen. I think she deserved everything she got in relation to the respect she got. The rest of them?
I question how much, in terms of the protocol and what you're supposed to do, what you're supposed to say and do. And I remember there was a big controversy once because Donald Trump walked in front of the mm-hmm. Queen as opposed to all this kind of stuff. I wonder either how aware the members of the royal family are themselves or how bothered they are. I mean, I guess all of them would be different. I wonder whether it's all the people who are around them that these are the rules, this is what you must do, mm-hmm. and they're just kind of, you know, going along their merry way, and maybe might be some of them more than others, I guess, might be a little bit kind of embarrassed about it all.
There was the great story about Michelle Obama when she put her hand on the Queen's back.
Yes.
The Queen had no problem
exactly.
with it.
Exactly, but the press went mad. How dare she? Doesn't she know the rules?
Queen.
Yeah.
So exactly. I think you're right. I think it's the what do they call it? The firm?
The firm, exactly.
The firm, the aides, all of that.
I think it is changing as well with the generations. Like you say, with the Williams age group, it's more acceptable to be flexible, whereas in the past it wasn't, and they were the rules. So I think, yeah, you're right. A lot of what you said there, I agree with.
Aren't the rules, to some extent, what differentiate them from everyone else? Because, I mean, ultimately, it is an institution that's based entirely in tradition. They don't serve any real purpose, you know, in terms of they don't have a power anymore, you know, so they are effectively a tourist attraction, you know, with a good charitable outreach and everything else, you know.
There'll be people screaming at the radio.
Sorry.
But this is good.
You know, so if you take away those fundamental things, like cursing, you know, the ridiculous pomp and ceremony that goes with it, and you kind of normalise them too much,
then
those lines get blurred and everything else.
No, absolutely.
You know? I've got some friends, is the King of Denmark or one of the, you know, Scandinavian countries, where the king is known to be sort of royal party boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of he's really not very respected in the country for that, you know, because he shows up at football matches and he gets drunk, and sometimes there's a large part of society that loves him for it.
Yeah.
But why does that say it's very inappropriate behaviour for a king?
Is that you'll never please everyone with this kind of thing. There'll be some people that, as you say, well, this guy's an example, people that think, oh, good for him, you know, being a bit more normal, and other people that expect, you know, that put them on the pedestal and expect them to behave differently and that people should behave differently towards them.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but isn't it?
It's funny how the Queen, our Queen, the Queen of England, I can't say the Queen of England because she wasn't known as the Queen of England. She was known as the Queen.
The Queen, yeah.
But the King of Denmark, the King of Spain, that they're known as from their country. But she was so special that she was just known as the Queen.
Mm.
And I think that the specialness of our royal family is changing. So King Charles, absolutely love him, but do I love him as much as I love the Queen? And the same one with William. I think I believe William, when he does ascend to the throne, his popularity will increase rather than it decreasing from the Queen to King Charles, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Irish
fascinating
opinion.
Yeah, it's, I think as well, are we still hung up on the national anthem? Whenever it gets played, I want to say the Queen.
In the Euros matches, right. I'm looking along the line, waiting for one of them to say Queen. They've done all right so far, I have to say. Yeah. We better take a break. Well done, everyone. We're very honest. That was great. We haven't been thrown off air yet, so we've done all right.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Men Talk with me in the studio, Luke Watkins, David O'Reilly and Ray Sweeney. This is a controversial one. You thought the last bit was controversial.
Oh, here we go.
So this one, I don't want to get into the crimes or what he did or whatever. This is going on, well, I'll read the headline first of all. A Dutch volleyball star sentenced to 4 years for having sex with a 12-year-old British girl will represent his country in Paris this month. It says, how can a child rapist be allowed to compete at the Olympics? So my question is, people who commit crimes such as this, who are sentenced, do their time, when they come out of prison, how much of a life, normal life, whatever that may be, should they be allowed to have? You know, should there be lines? Oh, he can, you know, have a normal life, have a relationship, have a job, but he can't be in the Olympics, or he can't be an MP, or, you know, where are the kind of lines here? Right? Because I'm not sure. I don't know.
I think, you know, there should be restrictions on his access to children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that fair
would
point.
Certainly make sense.
Yeah,
but,
and a school teacher wouldn't be. Yeah. Yeah,
but you know, in this is the judicial system, and you know, he's been imprisoned. He's served his time. Then I guess he should have a fair right to do anything he likes.
Yeah.
Would question, again, not knowing anything about the case, 4 years seems like a very short amount of time.
Yeah, it does.
You know, it would seem like 12 years might have been more appropriate, by which time he would have been too old to be in the Olympics anyway, and that would have been taken away from him.
Yes,
which country was it again?
Dutch.
It was Dutch, so we don't know what the laws are.
But it was British girl.
It's a complicated, yes.
But they are.
He served 1 year in a British prison.
Okay, so the Dutch laws could be a lot more liberal than what we think.
Which they probably are.
Mm. Yeah, probably.
12 is still very young.
Yeah.
It's a hard one.
It is.
I think banned from sport. Absolutely. From Olympic sport. Yeah, I would say.
Okay.
For sure. Banned.
But because of the specific crime or anyone that's been to prison?
No, because of that specific crime.
Yeah.
I think any crime with a minor or a child,
okay,
you shouldn't be allowed to compete publicly or professionally in a sport that's viewed by the public.
Yeah, interesting.
I think maybe.
I wonder how many, you know, there must be lots of careers that we might kind of deem that should be the case for, then, not just the Olympics, like you say, anything to do with kids, so school teacher or whatever, an MP. I mean, how many, you know, we could start, there could be quite a long list, couldn't there?
Any act of celebrity, any element of celebrity, again, you would think would not be okay. You know, kind of worshipping
TV presenter on mainstream television.
They won't be bowing to Prince William and the whole system's gone crazy, you know.
No.
Yeah, it's got to be stopped, isn't it? It's got to be eradicated. So you got to put something in that enforces it, I think.
Castration.
There you go.
To enforce it.
And then, drawn and quartered.
You know,
yes. But I find the whole idea of prison and what should happen to a person when they come out of prison fascinating. When Gary Glitter came out of prison, there was lots of reports, kind of people trying to find out where he was staying, where he was going to be living. You know, I better not be on my street and better not be anywhere near my children, all that kind of stuff, which is understandable. But again, a part of me thought, I mean, and this isn't necessarily what I think. I was just asking the questions in my own head, thinking, well, he's done his time in prison. What is his life out of prison supposed to be like? Not just Gary Glitter, but anybody. You know, you go to prison to do your time. When you come out of prison, what are you supposed to do? You know, should people be allowed to try and, you know, get a decent job, find a relationship, you know, live a normal life? Because if not, then what's the point of them coming out of prison?
It's getting into a lot more than just what this article is talking about, because the whole point of going to prison is to be rehabilitated.
Exactly.
However, is that what's happening?
Yeah.
So I would agree with probably everything that everyone has said, caveating it in, have we done the best we can as a society to ensure that this person cannot reoffend? I would suggest that his career as an athlete, this is the question that I think should be asked. Did that afford him the opportunity to commit the crime that he committed?
Mm.
If that is the case, then he should not be allowed to do what he's doing.
Yeah.
So was he coaching? And that was how he got into it.
Yeah.
I don't know. And we don't want to know because that's not what we're here for today.
Mm.
But if his chosen career as an athlete is not going to lead to him potentially reoffending, then I think he should be allowed to have a career.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would question with the Dutch is how do you think this is going to affect the reputation of your Olympic team?
Yes, very true.
Have you thought about that?
Yeah, the implications. Yeah. Is it worth it?
Is he that good to put the reputation of your country's Olympic team at risk?
That's very true, yeah. There'll be people that will just refuse to watch the volleyball on principle, or maybe the whole of the...
As we know, the football people, they boo when certain people get hold of balls.
Yeah.
So, and I mean footballs, I don't mean other types.
We're with you. Yeah.
So could the same happen, and could that actually impact the other teams that are playing volleyball, and is that fair? And I would like to ask the Dutch if they have actually thought about that.
Yeah. Good point. Well made.
They listen to the show, the Dutch.
Oh, do they?
Do they?
Well, Mr. Dutch, whoever
Dutch,
you are.
If you're listening,
all of them.
Give us a call.
The only other thing I was going to say, I have no issue with him being vilified in the press, though, like this.
No.
You know, I think he's committed this act and done the time, rehabilitated, not rehabilitated. Call him out on it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got to wear that badge. It's a decision he took to do this at some point in his life.
Yeah.
He's got to carry that with him. So, you know.
Yeah. Interesting.
How long did he serve in prison? Sorry.
4 years.
4 years.
4 years. And you can imagine that he would have received a nice welcome. Prisoners don't take lightly to child crime.
No, absolutely. Yes. Okay, we better take the last ad break.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the last part of today's Men Talk with me in the studio, Luke Watkins, David O'Reilly and Ray Sweeney. Okay, Bridgerton. Their love story made Bridgerton's third instalment the Netflix event of the year, racking up over 90 million views since its release in May. But an article describing the relationship between the period drama's lead characters, Penelope Featherington and Colin Bridgerton, as a mixed-weight romance has sparked outrage among fans. Nicola's character Penelope is larger than her love interest, played by Luke Newton. The article was written with the headline, "Are we still not ready for a mixed weight romance on screen?" They also questioned why calling people were going mad online, questioning why calling attention to the character's size was ever necessary. Critics also question why similar pieces are not written about television romances between larger men and slimmer women, saying that happens kind of all the time on screen. Why has no one ever picked up on that before? So, yes, just in case you haven't seen it, here's the picture of the two characters. She is slightly larger than him, but she's probably more kind of a normal size woman, but necessarily not the normal size women that we're used to seeing on television. You know, a lot of the women that we see in sex scenes, in films or television, are very, very slim. And I think that's what we're used to seeing. So as a woman who enjoys the show and have seen this series, I admit I did notice, but I thought it was a positive thing. I thought, wow, how nice that they're kind of normalising using larger women in romantic, steamy sex scenes. And I thought, brilliant. But I did notice it.
Mm. I'd love to know who it was who brought this to the attention of whoever wrote this article.
Yeah.
Because
Better to do.
No.
Yeah.
Like you said, I noticed it as well, but I was going, oh my God, how sexy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, wow. Yeah, what the hell?
It's just weird.
What the hell?
But it just goes to prove what we're used to seeing.
Mm.
For years and years and years, we're conditioned to kind of, this is what's beautiful, this is what's sexy, that, you know, this is what we're used to seeing. And as soon as you see something different, you go, people have something to say about, oh, this is interesting, they're using a slightly larger woman or a shorter woman or a, you know, it's not just a sex scene. You have to kind of, you're made to feel like, oh, this is unusual, but yet she's a perfectly normal, attractive looking woman.
Yeah, I like the programme. I really like the content, everything about it. I think it was quite spectacular.
Yeah.
It leaves you feeling good. It's a good feeling to that programme. And you don't even look into that. I mean, you mentioned that males haven't been called out on it before. I was thinking, straight away come to my mind was Little Britain.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, David Williams. Mm. I mean, nobody calls that out. Peter Kay, it's... The comparisons are there, but, you know, why?
It's irrelevant, isn't it?
Yeah. Why should we be calling her out on her weight?
Yeah.
It's the acting that she brings to the scene, not her body size.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think throw the article in the bin. It's Daily Mail?
Yeah. Fish and chip paper.
It's in the bin.
Exactly.
We love her.
So I'm just eyeing up the beard situation. This is interesting. Okay. How does a man know he's ready to settle down? He grows a beard, of course. Men ready to embrace the responsibilities of adult life may use facial hair to tell others of their social motive shift. So, David, have you ever had a beard?
I have.
Okay.
During the pandemic, when I was bored, I grew interesting. A beard.
You thought, I'm not going to see anyone, so now's the perfect time to try it out.
Don't have to shave every day, I hate. But I think quite a few of my friends might think that I am a little immature. But ready to settle down? Oh no, I think I've settled down. I think I've settled down.
So there was no correlation with you growing a beard to do with being wanting to settle down?
No. It was boredom and not wanting to have to shave every day, not having to shave.
Yeah.
Mm. But
there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah. Luke,
there is
beardage there.
There's beardage. It's been recently shaved, so it's much shorter than normal. And I have a beard purely out of laziness. Nothing to do with wanting to settle down. I just cannot be bothered shaving.
Okay.
Also, the price of Gillette razors is astronomical, so I can't afford to shave.
Yeah.
So that's it. And I've had a beard for as long as I can remember, really, before it was even trendy.
Yeah.
I was lazy enough to have a beard in those days.
Interesting.
So nothing to do with settling down for me.
Right. Also a bit of beardage.
Yeah, a bit of beardage going on, and it can be longer, sometimes shorter, but I definitely don't think it attracts women. I think it has the opposite effect.
Really?
I think women prefer clean shaven.
There's a debate. Do.
Is there? 50-50, is it?
Well, I don't know. I just think every woman's different.
Mm-hmm. What's your preference?
Well, it depends on the person. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say... I mean, my husband's never had one, and obviously I find him attractive, and I'm perfectly happy with his face as it is.
Yeah.
But that's not saying that I
wouldn't... You wouldn't mind a bit of beardage?
Exactly. No, that's not saying that I wouldn't find a man with a beard attractive, because I would, but I wouldn't go, oh, I'm into beards or I'm not into beards. If someone's attractive, they're attractive, whether they've got a beard or not, I think. That's my personal opinion, anyway.
And that's the difference between what you like... And a fetish, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I guess.
If you're into beards, then you're into beards.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
No, but there are some, when people talk about their type and stuff, some people say, oh, I like a man with a beard.
I mean, I get beard envy sometimes. You know, you look at these people.
I love
really
that. What
big,
is beard envy?
Well, they've got these, you know, really big and bushy. And you look at them and go, God, that's a well-groomed beard.
Yeah.
You know.
So they really like can't afford to shave.
Almost. Fear of beard. Missing out.
Yeah.
There's a tipping point.
Fobo.
There's a tipping point with the beard, though, I'm sure, where it gets to a point where it becomes much more expensive to maintain a big beard. Because you've got to shampoo it and comb it. And I mean, I don't know. But, you know,
Is it never itchy?
It can be in that when it gets hot.
Okay.
Yeah, if it goes a bit longer, it goes to about 3 weeks or about 4 weeks, it starts to get itchy. But the benefit of having a beard is not having to shave.
Mm.
If you think about it, you're literally scraping your skin.
Yeah.
So not having to do that for a few months is...
So would you never, I'm learning a lot here, would you never kind of shave round it? Do you just like not shave at all?
I only ever go to the barber. I very rarely shave myself. That's how lazy I've become with it. So I wait 3 or 4. I mean, if you'd seen me 2 days ago, it was out here.
Really?
Yeah, and so I'd see people go, your hair's long, your beard's long. So I'd have to send them to the barber.
So how often would you go to the barber then?
Ideally every 3 weeks.
Okay.
That's about manageable. I don't look too comical. If I get to 4 weeks, I start to look at a little ridiculous, and then 5-6 weeks, it's just a shaggy homeless
cartoon.
Night,
yeah.
And this, where it's at now, this is probably about a week. And if I was to go another week, it would be untidy. So I'd probably clippers.
Okay. And would you feel differently about your beard if and when your hair changes colour? Would that make a difference to you if you were to go grey? Always gone silent.
Well, we're all looking around the room seeing who's got grey.
My
beard was grey during the pandemic.
Okay,
yeah, and then I coloured it.
Oh, coloured you coloured your beard, but not... Oh, you did both. Okay, because you'd have to match, wouldn't you, I guess.
And then I looked really stupid. And then it didn't take so long for the beard to grow out, but the hair, 6 months,
went back to au naturel.
Oh, yeah.
I think it makes you look older, I think, a bit of beardage.
Mm.
So keeping it trim. Keep it trim.
And are you not bothered? Because there was an article about looking older, and I think, oh, there's no point talking about this with the guys, but I think it's an interesting one to discuss. Do you think about looking, not wanting to look too old and that kind of thing, in the same way that women are, like, always wanting to look younger and not wanting to look old? Do men think about that as well?
I catch myself sometimes in the mirror, and I'm surprised by how old...
Really?
You know, compared to the version of myself that lives in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and you see, and you go, God, there's bags under my eyes and all this sort of stuff. I did actually, I don't know why I'm saying this on radio, because I don't tell anyone this. I did think the other day, do I need a bit of Botox here? Which I've never, I've been very anti-Botox myself. Yeah. Something. So yes, clearly I am thinking about it more. But subconsciously, I don't want to.
No.
I don't want to at all. Don't tell anyone.
We've got 1 minute 25 left. I want to hear both of your opinions on this.
Well, shaving it down, shave the beard down to get the greys out, out of the beard.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where you start to notice it. I started to notice it like a few years ago. So if you keep it short and tight, then you don't see the grey coming through.
Okay.
Well, I had long hair up until last Friday. And I mean, like,
really?
Down to here.
Wow.
And I got it cut off on last Friday.
Yeah.
And within a day, people were going, God, you look 10 years younger. And it made me feel like top of the world.
Lovely.
Top of the world. 10 years younger. Go for it.
Yeah. Oh, nice one. Well done. Thank you all very much for coming on today. That was great fun. Pleasure. Thank you to Luke, David and Ray. Have a great weekend. I know it's only Thursday, but I don't work Friday, so my weekend starts now. And we have Howard Brereton coming up next after the news, the international headline stories at the top of the hour, and then Howard Brereton is with us with Spain Today. Thank you for your company this week. All the books on the book show tonight and all the books that have been on the show all week are available to purchase on our website tre.radio in the bookshop section. And don't miss the book show tonight from 7 o'clock. Some really interesting guests, particularly the woman from Cyprus. I love chatting to her. So have a good weekend, and I'll be back with you on Monday at 4 o'clock.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.